Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Ridley Planning Commission regular meeting for Thursday, January 18, 2018. Before we get started here, I was notified today that the Traffic Safety Commission has a meeting as well in this chamber at 6:30. So as such, our meeting needs to conclude by 6:15. So we're hoping to get that done for their convenience as well, and to allow them to perform their duties as such. Second, we have available comment cards. So if you want to be able to be one of the speakers during the public hearing, you can come pick up one of those cards here from Ellen, and we can go from there, and then we'll go in order from where they were received. But for that, I just wanted to make sure everyone knows what I was notified about today. Second, we're going to go ahead and do the Pledge of Allegiance. So if everyone please stand and face the flag. Ready? Salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you. Ellen, we're going to go ahead and do roll call for attendance.
Commissioner Barcellas. Chairman, Commissioner Barcellas is excused.
Okay.
Commissioner Bissett.
Here.
Commissioner Hudson.
Here.
Commissioner Perez.
Here.
Chairman Custodio.
Here.
All right, the next portion of our agenda here, prior to our agenda, is the public comment. This provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the Planning Commission on items of interest to the public within the commission's jurisdiction and which are not already on this agenda. So anything that you want to discuss that we're not going to be discussing today, you can go ahead and come up now. Okay, for the record, go ahead and just note that there was no public comment regarding other agenda items. So now we have our consent agenda in front of us, and we have item number one, which is for the commissioners regarding our minutes that we had our special meeting back in December 14th, 2017. Did you guys have an opportunity to review? Do you have any questions? Do we want to discuss that now at this moment? We're good? Okay. All right, so I'm going to go ahead I'm going to have file a motion to approve these minutes. So if I can get a second, that'd be great.
I'll second.
Okay. Can we get a roll call, please?
Chairman Custodio?
Yes.
Commissioner Bissett?
Yes.
Commissioner Hudson?
Yes.
Commissioner Perez?
Yes.
All right. So we come to our public hearing, agenda item number two. But before we go ahead and discuss this and hand it over to staff, I have something to say. I have a couple things to say, and this is just for the betterment of our meeting tonight. I want to remind the audience that when the public hearing item is open for discussion following staff's presentation and the commissioner's questions, anyone wishing to speak will have a maximum of 3 minutes to address the commission, with no more than 10 minutes of question and answer discussion per speaker allowed. Those wishing to show support for comments previously made should indicate such for the record without repeating the content. This is to ensure time for all those who wish to speak. Also wanted to discuss the importance of communicating in a calm and respectful manner with each other. This has been a highly charged and emotional topic, but professionalism and appropriate demeanor is expected. Should any party act in a manner that is viewed inappropriate or in a threat to the safety or well-being of these attending the meeting, they will be asked to leave and escorted out by Ridley PD. I also want to highlight the presence of Mr. Jim Sanchez, who is representing the city's attorney's office, who has been asked to attend to address any questions regarding the direction given to council regarding their role as the CUP appeal body, because an appeal action has repeatedly been discussed in involved parties. This is to protect due process for both the applicant and any party in opposition to the application. So now I'm gonna go ahead, with that said, I'm gonna go ahead and hand it over to staff for their report.
Thank you very much, Chairman. We do have a presentation
prepared for you tonight. Ellen has some hard copies that she's going to hand out. It is sizable. My apologies for that up front. As Chairman Custodio had previously notated, this has been a topic that has been discussed for several months now, so there is a lot of background that I want to make sure is properly understood. The appropriate information is shared so that the public has the opportunity to see that and to understand that as well. But I will try to be as succinct as possible to leave the maximum amount of time for public comment and questions to address the commissioners and for the appropriate amount of discussion to be able to take place. So what we're looking at here is item number 2. This is a public hearing. This is for consideration of environmental assessment 2018-1 and for conditional use permit 2018-1. Works better if it's turned on. There we go. Okay. So just to give a little bit of project summary here on the actual project that is going to be in front of you, I'll give just a brief background on this, and then I will go into the considerable background behind what the actual application is today and the activities that took place before this item that we're touching on. But this slide right here is going to just give a brief overview of what this project actually is. So conditional use permit 2018-1, commonly referred to as a CUP, so you'll see that acronym all throughout. It pertains to a proposed project to allow a maximum 18-person temporary emergency housing facility within an existing city-owned two-story single-family residence. The project would be operated by Hope Now Ministries, which is a nonprofit currently operating under the 501c3 or nonprofit status of the Heritage Church of God. Their operations would focus on providing temporary assistance to families due to an emergency, such as a tragedy, a job loss, etc. They will focus on providing temporary housing and clothing and life skills training, coaching, and spiritual guidance. It's very important for the commission and for those in the audience to understand that CUP approval does not constitute full approval for the operations of this facility. The applicant would still be required to enter into a lease agreement with the city and enter into a memorandum of understanding. Both of those require City Council approval. So the items that will be considered tonight associated with this conditional use permit are simply one step in an overall approval process to be able to allow something like this to take place. The project site itself, if you can see the star down there in the bottom left corner, is indicated. So it is in the southwestern portion of town. The project site is right next to it, the drawing of the actual site. Some of the details: the facility address is 1697 West Huntsman Avenue. The site is 0.8 acres in size, consists of a 6-bedroom, 3-bathroom home of roughly 2,500 square feet with an attached garage and also a storage shed. There's vehicular access to the site in only one location. That's on Huntsman Avenue at the corner of Kings River Drive. It is currently connected to city utilities, including water and sewer, and served by natural gas. It served as the former location of the Marjorie Mason Center from 2003 to 2016, and the use being proposed for it is similar in its size and scale. And the facility is owned by the city of Reedley. Looking at the bordering property information, to the north you have low-density residential, an established residential neighborhood, R16 zoning, all single-family homes. To the east is public institutional facility, that's the municipal wastewater treatment plant, also to the south of that same facility, and to the west is the expansion area for expansion of the wastewater treatment facility in the future. So to give a little bit of background on why we're here, what this conditional use permit is, where it came from, going to go all the way back to before previous discussions had even taken place on this to make sure that everybody understands why the topic came up in the first place. So city officials regularly receive calls from Reedley residents regarding needs for temporary housing, typically due to some type of emergency, particularly those that were notated before: a job loss, maybe a death in the family, even a fire destroying a home or a large portion of their home. And unfortunately, there's no facilities that are currently located within the city of Reedley that can offer that. As a result of that, there have been many families in the community that have done the best that they can to try to facilitate those in need, to help, sometimes even opening their own homes or opening their own wallets to try to provide some type of assistance, be it financial help with them to be able to get into a hotel or a motel or something of that nature, to try to assist as much as they can. The residents themselves were currently being referred to operations either in the Fresno area, in the metro area, or outside of Fresno County, typically in Tulare County. So because of this repeated need and request, city officials began researching potential providers and funding opportunities to place a facility like this within the city. That resulted in the city applying for a community-based transitional housing program grant. You'll see the acronym CTHP used throughout the presentation. It's what that's the grant that's referring to. That was applied for in June of 2017. It went before the city council in June of 2017, looking for their approval to apply for that grant opportunity, and was supported by the city council. Then in August of 2017, the city was notified that their application had been successful and that an award amount of $560,000 was being recommended for the city. After this application had gone in, there was concurrent research that was being conducted on multiple locations for the placement of such a facility within the city of Reedley. And ultimately, this location was deemed to be the most appropriate based upon other challenges that came with the other locations. Some of them were cost prohibitive. Some of them were owners or sellers that were not willing to relinquish any interest in the property, things of those nature. And so as a result of that, this facility and the fact that it had served as the Marjorie Mason Center before and had a lot of amenities already included in it became the preferred facility. And the proposed operations have been modeled utilizing successful social service program aspects from neighboring counties. From some examples, such as Open Gate in Dinuba, Teen Challenge that's actually located in Tulare County, but has a Reedley address and is often associated with the city of Reedley. So the grant awarding required, when we got notification in August, that the city take action on a conditional use permit, which is required to officially show the state agency, that's the Department of Finance, that the city intends to move forward with the project. The approval letter required that we go through a CUP within three public meetings of the award letter. It's a very odd item that was in there, but the city, after applying for those funds, did exactly that when we received that letter, and that's the reason why it came before the Planning Commission in September. And that was the initial program application that was conditional use permit 2017-6. That was presented to the Planning Commission at the meeting on September 25th of 2017, and following the public comment, the application was approved by a 3-1 vote. At that meeting, and since that meeting, many community members in attendance have expressed their concerns regarding the proposed operations. They had questions about the definitions, the funding program criteria, the facility location, a lot of public comment that was received. As a result, in an effort to make sure that they were able to address those concerns in the most appropriate and the most effective manner, the applicant actually elected to withdraw their application. And that nullified the previous application and even the action taken by the Planning Commission. They did that to conduct the additional public outreach so that they could hopefully be able to help educate people and help people understand what the program is seeking to do and what it's not seeking to do. Any program can be very challenging to start under a cloud of negativity. And the applicant very much so wanted the community to feel as comfortable as possible with the type of application that was going to be taking here and the type of operations that would be taking place in this facility. So in October, following the application withdrawal, city staff interfaced with the Department of Finance, who I said is the grant administrator. And we were doing that regarding the funding and the legislative criteria. We wanted to make sure that anything that the city and that the applicant was going to propose to take place on that site was going to be within the legislative criteria and that it was going to be clearly understood and accepted by the Department of Finance. So in response to that, the Department of Finance verbally confirmed that the legislative language, which is SB 837, that created the funding program, that ensured that agencies can utilize the funding to assist any target population that the city identifies as being that in need. In this specific instance, that is families in need of temporary housing. Such language is also found in all of the documentation that they had in their official memos and reports that went to the various budget committees throughout the state, in presentations that they gave to items such as the California League of Cities, statewide, so not only actual state agencies, but other statewide agencies as well. All of them had notation that while the target of this was certain populations that the state was wanting to make sure that these dollars were available for, that they could be utilized in any way that a receiving agency felt was appropriate. So they did provide that. They also stated that they will provide written confirmation of that and support for the proposed services for the required council actions following the CUP process. I wanted to make sure that was highlighted, why we don't have something from them in writing right now. The Department of Finance had actually said to us that they wanted us to show our commitment to attempting to move this project forward by going through the CUP process with the full understanding that CUP approval does not approve the project, that you would still have to go through the lease and the memorandum of understanding reviewed and approved by the City Council. But they believed that this would show a good faith effort on our part to show them that we intend to move forward with this process. And at that point, they stated they would happily provide that written confirmation of everything that I had just shared there. I want to also note, if the Department of Finance in any way were to then come back and elect not to provide written support, staff's recommendation on anything moving forward with this would actually be for the City Council to not accept the grant funds or utilize grant funding from this program in any way, because it would simply not match the items that the city was intending to do with it and with what the applicant was hoping to do with it. So public outreach meetings were held the evenings of November 9th and November 27th and during the afternoon of December 13th. The proposed operator as well as city staff were there to answer any questions that the public had and to make presentations. Many of the same exact concerns that were shared at the original Planning Commission meeting were also discussed at each one of those meetings and taken very seriously by staff. And we believe they're all valid and are trying to do our very best to respond to all of those. To ensure that there was good communication about the meetings, their locations, and the times, meeting announcement flyers were distributed door-to-door by the police explorers. They went throughout the entire adjacent neighborhood and the mobile home park that is just across the street as well. Fact sheets that address the most common concerns and questions were distributed at each one of those meetings. You'll find that as well as attachment 9 on the agenda item. And any additional one-on-one meetings with concerned citizens were also accommodated by staff between the last Planning Commission meeting and the present time as requested. So staff conducted research to address the major concerns or the questions that were presented by the community members at each one of those public meetings, and we're going to touch on a little bit of those today. Number one, there was significant community concerns regarding increased crime. The Reedley Police Department data does not indicate that there was an increase or a decrease in criminal activity during or after the Marjorie Mason Center operated on the site. The Fresno County Sheriff's Office also did not indicate that there was an increase or a decrease in criminal activity in the county areas that are adjacent to that site during or after operations associated with the Marjorie Mason Center. I want to make sure that it's notated there, though, that when we state that the data does not show those items, in no way is staff trying to state that we don't believe that those fears or those concerns are invalid. We believe that those are real, as anyone would have concern for their neighborhood, for their home, for their family. We present that as data and statistics that we garnered, and in no way are attempting to share something that is insensitive to those that have those concerns. Next, the real estate values will be significantly impacted in a negative manner. If you recall, there was a comment made about real estate values drastically dropping immediately if a facility like this were to be placed. We've actually met personally with local real estate professionals, including the one that was actually called out by name during the public meeting and stated that real estate professional had made a very specific comment. And they confirmed that data or statistics associated with that type of drop actually do not exist. But we did talk at length about some of the challenges that can be associated with those items. It's important to notate that it's no there's nothing in the real estate market that ends up being singular. There's always multiple faceted issues that can impact property values. Similar to the first one with the concerns about crime, this is not to say that that's not a real concern that anybody would have for the home that they work so hard for. Unfortunately, though, there just is not data that actually supports that facilities like this create a significant decrease or even a legitimate decrease in the property values for those surrounding them. With that said, those that are poorly managed could absolutely have some type of negative impact on the surrounding community. So as stated at the last Planning Commission, I think it's important to highlight again that management is key, and that will be addressed through the lease and the MOU. Lastly, the operator or the city will not have control over what populations may be served in the facility. This one comes from the fact that the Senate bill that actually established this program right here, 95% of the content discusses the state's intent to provide funding for offender release programs. Over the last several years, the state of California, as you know, has gone into many, has relinquished a lot of laws and come up with a bunch of different laws that release offenders much quicker, much sooner than they had before. And in some instances, people that would have been incarcerated for certain type of crimes don't serve any jail time and are immediately released into the community. You can imagine the amount of concern that gave to local agencies and the local agencies that now have to address this increase of criminal activity potentially within their communities. As a result of that, the state felt significant pressure to provide some type of funding to help agencies that were seeking to deal with this problem. So about 95% of that, of the Senate Bill 837, focuses very strongly on the state's intent, that's what these dollars are being placed for, is for the people that are looking to address that, and that is that their hope that they will be able to do that. But there is a very large caveat in the legislative language that states very clearly, and all throughout the communications that the Department of Finance has had with this program, that it does not, the money does not have to serve those populations. But that's what they were intending for those dollars to do, was to address the local agency concerns, to assist with the dollars to address that. So when you say the operator or the city will not have control over what populations may be served in the facility, that's what that is responding to, or referring to, excuse me, is the fear that the state would have the ability to come back and say, SB 837 talked about reintegrating people and offender release, and we're going to force you to spend that on that. And we believe very firmly and have received confirmation, like I said, from Department of Finance that they will provide in writing following CUP action, that the combination of a confirmation of those populations to be served from the Department of Finance, in addition to an approved CUP, an approved lease, and an approved MOU, will ensure that clarity and that control. And if at any time, if this project were to be approved and to move forward at any time, if it is not operating in that manner, the city would have significant and very quick ability to go in and to address that. Even as far as to shut down operations immediately, if it were something that were causing that level of concern, the city takes those type of items extremely seriously and will continue to do so. Another item that I wanted to touch on is the term transitional housing. That has been utilized a lot as we've had this discussion, and the reason why is because transitional housing is a definition, a term that is used by the state of California, and they typically use that as an umbrella term. Several years back, they felt that they had too many definitions that dealt with what they used to call group housing or group quarters. So they took all of these items and said, let's put all of these things under one definition, or under a smaller group of definitions. This type of facility ended up under the definition of transitional housing. And they define that in the California Health and Safety Code, section 50801. In addition, the reason why that was used in previous staff reports was because that term is actually part of the grant funding program. The grant funding program is called the Community-Based Transitional Housing Program. So the effort, of course, from staff was to try to make sure that it was very clearly understood that grant program and the application that was going forward at that time were related by that. We did not have the full understanding that was going to be as concerning of a definition. But we definitely do now want to make sure that it's addressed and people understand what it is. So the definition of transitional housing per the state of California is housing with supportive services for up to 24 months that is exclusively designated and targeted for recently homeless persons. Transitional housing includes self-sufficiency development services with the ultimate goal of moving recently homeless persons to permanent housing as quickly as possible. I think you'll see as you read that that is a very good definition for the type of service that this application is seeking to provide there. At the same time, you can also see where that could be applied to many different programs and many different applications. So the term transitional housing, when it is utilized for this specific project here, does not need to raise to the level of concern that the former definition or definitions of transitional housing used to entail. So what are we looking at now for the for the current application? The current application that is being submitted is Conditional Use Permit 2018-1. Operations of the proposed Faith House, which the operational facility is being called, so you'll hear me refer to it now as Faith House, will focus on providing temporary housing, clothing, life skills, training, coaching, and spiritual guidance for families. The proposed operator is Hope Now Ministries, operating under the 501c3 nonprofit of Reedley Heritage Church of God. The city will lease the facility to the operator. Funding for the project would be completely grant-funded through the state's CTHP program, as discussed. Program is based on a 30-day stay with a one-time 30-day extension possible, but under no circumstance will tenants be allowed to exceed a 60-day stay. Let's talk about what the proposed facility is not. It is not a halfway house. It's not a drug rehab facility. It is not an offender release facility, and it will not operate as an open homeless shelter. The proposed facility will also not serve sex offenders, active parolees, single males of any kind, and anyone who does not pass through the vetting and approval process that we will discuss in a minute. The facility operator would be required, as previously mentioned, to maintain the conditional use permit, a lease agreement, and a memorandum of understanding at all times with the city. What does that mean? Conditional use permit allows for approval to conduct specific activities on the site. As I said, that's one step of the process and what we would be discussing tonight. The lease agreement would detail the legal requirements and the responsibilities that regard the use of the site. That has to be reviewed and approved by the City Council following conditional use permit actions. And then a memorandum of understanding, commonly referred to as an MOU, would detail the application and the vetting process, would talk about the operational requirements, their limitations, what their performance standards are, their roles and their responsibilities. It would talk about what is expected of the day-to-day operations of the site so that the city knows exactly what the operator is proposing to do and what the city is going to hold the operator accountable for. Similar to the lease agreement, that has to be approved by City Council, reviewed and approved by City Council, also following any CUP action. During the required application process that any potential tenant would go through, they would be vetted through the Reedley Police Department, and that's to ensure the safety of those in the facility as well as to the adjacent neighborhood and everyone in the community. There's a flow chart. Ellen handed out some colored copies. We have some additional ones here if anybody in the audience would be interested in looking at some of the colored copies here if you don't already have one. It was attached to the staff report. It's attachment 8 and exhibit A of that attachment. There was just a note there, again, that talked about the crime statistics provided by the Reedley PD and the Fresno Sheriff. They didn't show that there was an increase or a decrease reported in criminal activity, but that doesn't mean that we're not going to always be sensitive for any type of potential of that. And it's also important to notate that a live-in manager will be on site at all times that the facility is operating. Location previously served as the Marjorie Mason Center. It's been equipped with additional amenities to accommodate multiple tenants. It has enhanced safety, alarm systems actually that are in every single bedroom, security, temperature control, additional food preparation and laundry facilities all on site. So the home is set up to accommodate multiple families or multiple tenants already. In addition to that, any needed upgrades and maintenance would be performed to those, not only those systems, but would also have some additional performance items that would be placed on site as well. Then maintenance and upgrades and those being proposed, they're listed in Exhibit B of the draft memorandum of understanding. That's attachment 8. And just to highlight some of the items it includes, because the list is fairly long, as you've seen, but to include some of those that I think are very, very important and we wanted to highlight. First, removal of the chain link fence that sits on the northern property edge right now. That's the actual separator between the adjacent neighborhood and this facility. Right now, as stated, it's just a privacy chain link fence with some privacy slats in it. Really doesn't provide for a whole lot of uniformity or really even good separation between the adjacent neighborhood. We will be replacing that with a solid face wall that matches the adjacent neighborhood design. What I mean by that is there's a wall that goes up Kings River Road right now. It would match that wall and go around the other side. I have been in communications with the property owner there to ensure that they understood what the project is and to talk to them about the potential for that type of improvement separating between their home and this facility, and they were supportive of those activities, and of course have asked me to keep in touch with them on any progress, as we have to and have done and will continue to do. Also, there will be significant landscaping improvements. If you've seen the site recently, a lot of what was grass that is now dead, trees that could definitely use some trimming and some care. So all of those items will be happening there to make it an aesthetically pleasing site, as well as a place that is comfortable for any potential tenants. And there will be parking area upgrades as well, repaving the parking area and making sure there's appropriate striping and things of that nature. And while the target populations of some of the examples that I'm going to talk about here are different, the criteria that you place for any type of successful social program can be utilized across a range of situations. And so I wanted to point to two very good examples that Faith House has referenced in their design and their proposed operations. So the first one is Open Gate in Dinuba. It was opened in 1974. It operates very much like a single-family home. It is right in the middle of a single-family neighborhood, literally with homes on either side of it. Those that have been associated with that program, both that have stayed there, that we have talked to, and those that have volunteered their time there, have let us know that it does provide a very welcoming atmosphere for homeless families, and that it's somewhere that they feel has been very successful. Obviously, since 1974, if it's still in operation, something there is being done in a good manner for it to remain in operation. Our outreach to the Dinuba police reported that there was no spike in criminal activity that's associated with that home beyond any additional or any activity that they may see in other areas similar to that. And the other one I wanted to touch on was the Central Valley Teen Challenge. This is technically in Tulare County, but it has a Reedley address. Their local facility opened here in 2014, and it's adjacent to the Emanuel Sports Complex. Their mission is to provide youths, adults, and families with an effective and a comprehensive Christian faith-based solution to life-controlling drug and alcohol problems. Now, while this proposed facility here won't be addressing anyone that has any type of struggles with any type of controlled substance abuse or anything of that nature, there's the Christian faith-based aspect of it, I think, is right along in the same line and what they're looking to do there. This serves as an excellent example of a faith-based social service and an educational partnership. In addition to the partnership that you see, obviously, between the Emanuel schools and their facilities and Teen Challenge, that you also see Teen Challenge very, very active with the Mennonite Church in town as well. At least once a week, they'll be on their facilities in town doing various Bible studies and activities such of that nature. So I think it's important to point out that these faith-based items can operate in a very, very effective and a very efficient manner. And our outreach to the Sheriff's Department in regards to this one and to Emanuel, they also reported that there's no spike in criminal activity associated with those programs. For the application and the vetting process, each potential tenant would have to complete the application and vetting process, and that process entails this. I'm going to show a flow chart on the next one. That's also what was handed out to you. And as I had mentioned, there's some copies up here if anybody's interested in taking a look at them. But to just run it through bullet point, you have eligibility confirmation, which would first happen by the Hope Now director. So a family in need would be identified. And then the director would get them the application materials. When they submit their application, the determination of whether or not they are eligible as an applicant would be made. If they are ineligible, they would simply be referred to outside services to try to assist them. If they are eligible, then their application would go to the Reedley Police Department for validation. That's where the background check and the live scan would take place. If the Reedley Police Department believes that, that has been appropriately vetted and they feel that they can be validated, those on the application can be validated, they will then pass that application information back to Hope Now. It will then go before their board for approval of the actual tenants. And a minimum of two of their board members must be present for any approval to take place at that point. If approval is given at that point, then the applicant would sit down with the Hope Now director, they would review and they would sign the rules and regulations that will be associated with the facility as determined appropriate by their board and referenced in the MOU that they would maintain with the city. And if they were to review and sign that item, they would then be allowed into the facility. Now that sounds like a long and a very arduous process, but the reason why that process is being put in place is to make sure that the addressing of community concerns for safety and appropriate application and vetting is taken care of as well as possible and has as many checks and balances along the way as possible as well. So this is the actual attachment 8, exhibit A. That's the flow chart itself there. I won't go over it again. It just lays out exactly what I had just explained there. If you have any questions about it, by all means, feel free to ask me. The applicant is also here and can answer any questions as well, because of course this the process was a collective effort between them and the Reedley Police Department. Okay, and while it's not a part of the CUP application, the draft lease agreement and the MOU were both attached for the Planning Commission and for the public reference. And those are attachments 7 and 8 to the Planning Commission report, respectively. While the Planning Commission won't be taking any action on that, there was a lot of questions about that during the public outreach. They wanted to know what those items would look like, what type of things would they include, what type of things would they not include. And so we wanted to make sure that the drafts of those items were included here. And again, those items would have to be reviewed and approved by the City Council at a future date. So Planning Commission not taking any action on those items tonight, but included for your reference and hopefully to address some questions that the community members may have. As I just stated, the City Council would have to take action on both of those items. The MOU also includes two exhibits that go with it. You have the application, the vetting process flowchart, which we talked about, and the Faith House repair and renovation list. Both exhibits were attached within the Planning Commission staff report. So the CUP, the lease, and the MOU all reference each other. The reason why that is done is to ensure that if there's any violation of one, all of them can be addressed. So if there's something in the MOU that is not being addressed appropriately by the facility operator, if it were to be approved, the city could be able to address that and also look into rescinding a conditional use permit, canceling a lease agreement, and invalidating a memorandum of understanding. If there was something in the conditional use permit that they were violating, then you can rescind the conditional use permit, which would also cancel the lease and invalidate the memorandum of understanding. So you can see how they would all be tied to each other. And again, that is for checks and balances and to ensure maximum accountability for the operator and the city's ability to be able to address any potential concerns or issues there might be if this were to be approved and move forward. So with that, the environmental assessment, number 2018-1, determined that there are various exemptions that apply to this project because there is no addition of the building or anything of that nature. We're talking about upgrades, maintenance. These are all exempt under the California Environmental Quality Act under the various sections for the items that I previously discussed. I won't go into the details, but there are the four categories there that have the exempt activities under it. Happy to expound on that if anybody would like for me to, but CEQA talk can put a lot of people to sleep very quickly, so I won't subject you to all of that. In regards to the financial impact, staff believes that there's no negative financial impact to the city that's associated with this application because the site is already owned by the city and it's going to be leased to the operator. All operational maintenance costs are to be funded by the state of California through the Community-Based Transitional Housing Program grant, and that is administered by the Department of Finance. The city is actually the grantee that receives those, so we have the control over the funding as well. With all of that said, staff makes the following recommendations to the Planning Commission through the adoption of Resolution 2018-1. We recommend that the Planning Commission approve environmental assessment number 2018-1, determining that the conditional use permit application number 2018-1 is exempt from the California Environmental Quality Act based upon the following exemptions. And we recommend that the Planning Commission approve conditional use permit application number 2018-1, which allows for the placement of a temporary emergency housing facility at 1697 West Huntsman Avenue. And I would just point out again, that allows for the placement of, does not approve the operation of, but the conditional use permit allows for the placement of a temporary emergency housing facility at that location with a lease and an MOU that would still be required that are pointed to within the within that same resolution. And I will also make a note that in resolution 2018-1, there was one small administrative oversight, no change to the resolution itself. Items 10 and 11 within that resolution were inadvertently swapped. So what is labeled as item 10 was intended to be item 11, and what is labeled as item 11 was intended to be item 10. No text change in any manner, just the order in which those are given. The reason why is the final, condition number 11 is the final condition there, and it states that all the foregoing conditions must be met before the building official would allow a certificate or allow occupancy and to give a certificate of occupancy. Obviously, all of the conditions that are labeled there were intended to be before that. So that was simply an administrative error, and we wanted to make sure that's pointed out. So I would ask that if any commissioner intends to make a motion on that resolution, that they include that notation for the swap of 10 and 11 to be there so that it's very clear and we can make sure that that is addressed appropriately. With that said, that concludes staff's presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions the commission has.
Thank you, Rob. That was an extensive report. I appreciate all your guys' hard work and allowing us to make a decision here. Commissioners, you heard staff's report. Is there any concerns, questions that we need to address as this is our time?
I have none. But I do want to thank the staff for one heck of a job of doing their due diligence and covering the pros and cons, not just the cons, but the pros as well, too, and being as transparent as we have been. And so I know that by your presentation here, you weren't looking at all your notes here, so you truly understand what you've just said and what you've stated and what's stated in the CUP and the Memorandum of Understanding and so on. So I truly appreciate the great work you folks have done with regards to making it as transparent and as plain as can be, because I truly understand what we're trying to do here, and it's because of your efforts. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? No. I too, again, just want to reiterate it's extensive. I'm happy that the staff was able to reach out to the community. I mean, that's what we're supposed to do as a city. And I'm happy that we are that kind of city, that we can reach out if there's any concerns and to address everything and try to educate as much as possible, even if it might not be ideal, but it's good to educate and to receive, you know, criticism and to talk about, to have a conversation. So I appreciate that.
Thank you.
That's a lot of work. Okay. Well, with that said, the next portion would be the public comment. I want to open that, but before I open that section there, I just want to remind everyone again, we have that 3 minutes per speaker limit. So if we can be respectful to that, we have a counter here. And just because, you know, we have that other appointment or that other facility, the other commission is going to use the facility here. But we want to give you guys enough time to go ahead and speak and give your comments. And again, and to and that we expect, you know, that everyone would be have an appropriate and respectful demeanor towards everyone. So with that said, I'm going to go ahead and open the public comment.
to point out, I do have cards up here. If anyone would like to speak at any time, you can bring one. I have pens as well. So I will call the names in the order that I receive them. So please bring them back to me. So the first person I have is Ruth Nunez. If you could come up, please.
Ellen, if someone filled that out earlier and then now, you know, doesn't want to participate in that, in the public comment, for whatever reason they decide, is that okay as
yeah.
well?
Mm-hmm.
They can
okay.
just go ahead and say, I'm okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
So please approach the microphone there, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Claudia Lara, and I'm going to be translating for Ms. Nunez.
Thank you, Ms. Lara.
Hola. Buenas tardes a todos.
Buenas tardes.
Mi nombre es Ruth Nunez, y soy residente de esta ciudad. Estoy aquí representando a algunos miembros de la comunidad aquí presentes. Gracias. Estamos aquí para apoyar la Casa de Fe, proyecto en el cual creemos y sabemos que será de alto beneficio para todos los residentes de esta ciudad de Reilly. Yo, al igual que las personas que aquí represento, estamos dispuestos a ayudar voluntariamente esta Casa de Fe. Por lo tanto, estamos listos y disponibles para hacer todo lo necesario para que este proyecto se lleve a cabo y sea todo un éxito. Gracias.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Ruth Nunez. I am a resident of this city. I am here representing some of the members from this community. We are here to support the Faith House project, in which we believe and we know it would be a great benefit for all the Reilly residents. The persons that I represent are willing to volunteer. We are ready to help make this project a success.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next person, Baker.
Thank you, guys. It's good to see you guys again. My speak will be cut short because Rob did such a good job. He covered everything I had on my list, so I'll shorten it up for you guys. Basically, I just want to share just from my heart. I have a written statement here. I'm just going to, you know, like I said, he covered most of that. But being my relationship as a chaplain, being involved with the police department here, there's such a unique relationship with this ministry, me being the director of it, and the relationship with the police department that we did not have with the previous tenants. And with this relationship, is there's a direct line of communication that's going to be constantly going back and forth to make sure that we cover all the checks and the balances and making sure that this house and this ministry is ran with the highest amount of integrity that we can do. With that, I would ask you guys, and I will be asking the city council, I understand that your guys' reputation's on the line. I understand that what you guys do is very difficult. And I'm asking you guys tonight to do what is good for the community as a whole. And I personally have been involved in leadership for 20 years. And there's been a lot of times in my ministry that I've had to make decisions that were not popular. I've even lost friends along the way, but I've always tried to make my decisions based on the fact what is good for the whole of the community or the whole of the ministry. And I'm asking you guys, and I believe that you guys will, I'm asking you guys to do the same. With that, just in closing, there's three people in this room that I trust completely, without any doubt whatsoever, with my life and the life of my kids and my family. And the fact that our chief of police has put his name and his seal of approval upon this ministry and his own integrity on the line, I trust him completely. And I think we should all do the same. And if we can't trust our own police department and our own chief of police, we should all just go home, close the blinds, and just wait for the world to end. Because I do trust these two men standing behind me, and Officer Alamon also over there. And, you know, they put their name on the line, you know, for this ministry. And this is good for the whole community as a whole. We did, in the three town hall meetings that we went to, we took in a lot of the concerns of the neighborhood and the community. Rob has addressed every single one of those, with the only addition, one that I would like to add, is one of the concerns came up with the bus stop that is right in front of the house. And my advice to, you know, all the parties involved is that we very easily great expense, we can put a 24-hour surveillance camera right there in front of the property with a sign that says, you know, under 24-hour surveillance, because there were some concerns about people parking there and concerns of the children. And so that was the only thing that I would like to address that that we didn't get on there. And that is something that we will do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rodney Scott Branch.
Hello. I appreciate Ruth coming up here, and I appreciate the people that support this as much as I don't support it. But I don't support it not because of them, and not because of the ministry. I don't support it because of the state of California. And you're asked to vote tonight to give the state a warm, fuzzy feeling about moving forward. And in return, they're giving you a verbal okay. A verbal okay from the state of California, as far as I'm concerned, isn't worth the paper that it's not written on, because it's a verbal. And you know as well as I do, and the lawyer in the room knows as well as I do, is that if it's not in writing, it's not worth anything. Not in this state, not in the most litigious state in America. And the reality is that in 2012, the front door of my house was kicked in. And my neighbors, luckily, were home, and they reported it. And they took a lot of things from my home. And luckily, they were only things, and my family wasn't hurt. And then those people kicked in the door of the house on the corner. And then they kicked in another door of a gentleman who was at home at the time. And it turned out that those people were directly related to some ladies who were staying at the Marjorie Mason Center home. It wasn't their fault. They were just there. It was a begrudging ex-boyfriend that was trying to get to her and couldn't get to her, got the rest of us. So I'm not saying that that's going to happen again. But I am saying that that's a huge concern for all of us who live ever so close to this house. I mean, I live so close, you could throw a softball and hit the house. And I know that you're going to put up a wall. But the reality is that kind of a wall, you can get over it. And you were talking about the teen challenge. I would absolutely support that location like that. Because if anybody's ever been to the teen challenge location, it's down where Kingsview used to be, and it's not in a neighborhood. It's out in the country. And I have no problem with that. And I have no problem with the ministry. I even told Ken at the last meeting that I was at Emmanuel High School, that I would be more than happy to help him if it was a private project, without any hesitation. But given the fact that it's the state of California, I have real, real issues with this. So that's why I would encourage you to vote no on this particular project and let the community work out a private project.
Thank you.
If I could just add one clarification there to make sure that it was clear on the slide that I presented, the verbal communication that we had with the Department of Finance, they stated that prior to CUP activity, they would not provide something in writing, but would provide something in writing following the conditional use permit process. So I just wanted to make sure if that was not clear on the slide, I want to make sure that everybody does understand that. We are not talking about if this were to move forward in an approval process, we are not talking about something that would be taking the state's word on it, because I actually agree with Mr. Branch.
Robert Miller.
Good evening.
Good evening.
First, I'd like to, unfortunately, I wish you guys would have the opportunity to listen to every single opposition comment that has been presented to City Council over the last couple of months, and then you would have a better understanding of how the entire community feels. And I want to emphasize, overwhelming opposition, 90 plus percent of the citizens who live in Riverview Estates and the Mobile Home Park oppose this, the location of the projects. And I'll just agree with the sentiment that was just stated. It's not against the people who agree with it. It's not against the ministry. We disagree with the location. And again, there was criminal activity during Marjorie Mason Center. Besides the burglar or the residential burglaries that occurred, there were other vehicle burglaries, petty thefts that occurred throughout our community, drug paraphernalia found just on the other side of our fence related to the Marjorie Mason Center. Things I'm not going to say because we have children present were found just over my fence in the backyard. But besides that, I just want to say this. There's other things that you need to consider about this location. The lack of public transportation it's out in the middle of nowhere. There's no public services available in the general area of that location. Stores, medical facilities, other things. Facilities like this need to be in a downtown area where they can get the services they need and they like. But I'm gonna talk about two other things, and I unfortunately don't have a prepared statement like I've had before, but I disagree. I've been in contact with the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation Services Department, and they have several programs for offenders released from state and county jails, and they fund those programs. And there's a link to transitional housing in their link. The other agencies that were funded are identified in that link by the Department of Finance. I do not believe the Department of Finance can provide money to a city or county for a purpose that's directly unrelated to the reason it's stated in that grant. And there's probably not time. You need to read that grant. There is a half a sentence, and you can confirm this, a half a sentence that says they can use it for other purposes. The rest of the document deals with offenders released from state and county jail. And my belief is that half a sentence is related to, in addition to housing offenders, you can house these other people. Unfortunately, I got a lot of other stuff. I wish you had the opportunity to listen to all the negative comments and the opposition that were against it, but I strongly urge you to vote no. You have an entire community that is against it.
Kathy Wilson.
Hi, my name is Kathy Wilson. I've lived in this community for 53 years, for a long time, and you do not have an entire community that's against this. I am not against it. And even if you read some of the comments in the Exponent today online, you'll see that there are other people who are in favor of this house. I've volunteered for approximately 10 years on and off at Open Gate Ministries, and it is a wonderful organization. They helped people. I'm not speaking on behalf of them, but from my own opinion there, we've helped people who are displaced because of the citrus freeze, who lost their jobs, homes on who have that they've lost because of fires, divorce, loss of other jobs. And there's a great need for this. It is a wonderful organization. I trust our chief of police when he says we will not use it for as a transitional home for ex-cons or drug addicts. We have a great organization that handles the drug addiction and teen challenge. It's wonderful. And I also trust Kenny Baker. I've known the Bakers for 6 years, and they have a real heart for ministry. They have a heart for the community, and they have a heart for the public. And I just think this is a valuable asset. I just am so pleased that we have the chief of police behind us. I don't know what else you could ask for in that. Thank you.
Repeat that name again, please.
Sage Clark.
Hello, everybody. Hello. I wrote 3 pages in a hurry this afternoon to try to summarize all my thoughts and feelings. A lot of you guys have heard them already. I don't come here to speak to the members in the audience. I come here to speak to you guys, and I second everything that the opposition to the placement of the home has said. Page 1 talked about how I grew up in a mobile home, a victim of domestic violence myself, drug and alcohol abuse. I see the need for these homes. I'm one of those people who was helped as a child by this type of service. My argument, my opposition has nothing to do with how much the city really needs this. It has everything to do with where this home is placed. I do agree with the people who spoke earlier about the language, where the grant monies come from, and what the state's intended use is and who they intend to serve. I believe firmly that they intend to serve the criminal element and their surrounding. And my page 2 was all about how much I love the city of Reedley, and I love our police force, and I love the schools that my kids go to. And in particular, I bought the house where I live because I love the area so much, because it was quiet, because the neighbors had kids. It was like a dream driving through that area when we were looking for a place to buy. I witnessed myself. I used to ride my bike around, the area quite a bit. I'm the head of the neighborhood watch in our neighborhood. I hear a lot of the complaints, a lot of the concerns. I go out firsthand and witness the graffiti and the broken glass. I've mentioned on countless occasions before when we've stood here and talked about, you know, finding crack pipes smashed on the ground so I couldn't have my kids walk in their sandals anymore in that area. I really, just like everybody else, I need way more than 3 minutes. So I'm just gonna go to my page 3. It's a little bit aggressive, but it needs to be heard. So here goes, guys. And like I said, I do appreciate also all the work that you've done, Mr. Terry. But just hear me out. Think about this when you make your decision. Conflicts of interest, and I'm gonna read off a prepared statement and jump around a little bit. The City of Reedley Police Chaplain, Ken Baker, the City of Reedley Police Chaplain, Mayor Pro Tem, Frank Pignon, are working together with the Heritage Church to get the CUP put through for this faith house. The City of Reedley Chaplain, Ken Baker, is also pastor of the Heritage Church and the chair of the House of Hope Project. Who's benefiting here? Now, I know that the intended and stated goal is to benefit the public, and I believe, 3 minutes is up. Well, guess that's that. I'll just catch you guys next time. But I vote no on this house for a multitude of reasons, a conflict of interest being the largest. We can't speak to our council members. They won't speak to us about any of the issues that are going on. They've been advised by legal counsel to not speak to us. So our representatives won't have a dialogue. So it's incredibly frustrating. Who do I go to? I feel like I'm getting the runaround. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'd like to address the last comment that Mr. Clark had there and make sure that the public has the understanding, as well as the planning commissioners have the understanding. Early on in discussions about this proposed project, there was discussions that if it were approved, if it were denied, that there would be an appeal made. The City Council sits as the appeal body for any Planning Commission decision that is going to be appealed. When they sit as the appeal body, they are sitting as a quasi-judicial body. In layman's terms, that means that they serve as judge and jury, and the decision that they make on that item is final. It is, in all instances, for the protection of the applicant and anybody opposing that application, that the City Council be given the legal advice to keep separate from that item if it appears as though there is going to be an appeal that they will need to hear in an official manner. That is the reason why there has been that separation with the council members, and not to say that I do not understand the frustration that can go along with that, but I wanted to make sure that it was very clearly understood why there has been that separation in this instance and why that was the recommendation given from the city attorney's office.
Thank you.
The first thing I would like to address is continuing this conversation. The residents have not appealed an initial conditional use permit, rendering the advice of City Attorney Scott Cross pointless. They cannot use this as an argument on the grounds that someone might appeal, or where they would never need to speak to anybody about anything. Correct? City Council cannot impartially adjudicate a legal issue in which they are one side of that issue. This is their idea. They own the house. We would be the defendant. They would be the plaintiff, the jury, and the judge. We don't have a chance. We do not have a chance because the City Council, this is their baby. They're going to put $320,000 that do not go to that house in the city coffers. Doesn't that seem a little odd? That's, to me, that is ethically untenable. And I think that you need to think very deeply about that. If that is not a see, there's a loophole they're using here with all of this. Because generally you would be asked to be approving a CUP for privately owned property. And the owner of that property would be petitioning you to use that. And then the people who didn't want it used, what they would be petitioning against it. But in this case, the City Council wants this. This is their baby. And we're saying, we don't want this. And the only people that we would even be able to appeal to is them. And they're the final authority. And to me, as an American, that's not the way it's supposed to work. Seems to be working that way. Anyhow, we have a notification of grievance and petition to quit and rezone. I'd like to read that. I think I can get it through in this amount of time. Signed by 68 people in our neighborhood. And the only people who care one hoot about this are the people who live in Riverview Estates and the people who live in the mobile home park. Those of you who live on the other side of the river could care less. You can just feel good about yourselves for having a wonderful thing, a ministry that we all support in theory. To be secure in one's home and property is a natural right. As citizens of Reedley, we vote and pay taxes specifically to support a city infrastructure to secure and protect that right. However, from 2004 through approximately 2015 or 16, a period of time coinciding with the operation of the Marjorie Mason Center at the city-owned house at 1697 West Huntsman, residents living west of the Kings River along Olson Road experienced a significant decline in their property values and quality of life. Gang graffiti was prolific along the walls, which I scrubbed out myself, and I didn't call the police. I painted it myself. I'm tired of doing that. walls of the mobile home park in Riverview Estates, as well as on community mailboxes. Residents experience petty theft of garden tools, automobile accessories, and home decorating items. Automobile windows were broken and items stolen out of parked vehicles. Nefarious-looking individuals are commonly seen either walking or bicycling through the neighborhood. Clandestine meetings were observed suggesting drug-related dealings. Most unfortunately, some residents' stores were battered down and their homes ransacked in broad daylight. With the closure of the Marjorie Mason Center, the crime, graffiti, and odd goings-on faded away. The city of Reedley wants to again use its house at 1697 West Huntsman for another social outreach program of providing transitional housing, but has, in an effort to push through a conditional use permit to that effect in order to collect $560,000 in state grant money, demonstrated a disregard not only for the public testimony of people living in the area, but also certain laws and ethical conflicts that sanctioned that cause us great concern, to wit, one, empirical evidence more than suggests that crime abated in the area with the closure of the city-sanctioned Marjorie Mason Center. Two, Reedley Municipal Code and State Code specify that all owners of property within 300 feet of the exterior boundaries of the real property in question be notified by mail of any public hearing regarding a conditional use permit application. Reedley conditional use permit application
Sunroo, could you finish it up, please?
Okay. Just to briefly summarize the rest of it, the initial notification did not follow the California law, and that's why the initial permit was rescinded, we believe. And they went back, and then they notified way more people than they had before because it didn't fit. So anyway, I would like permission to present this to you, these signatures.
You can give it to Ellen, please. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, we're actually up against it now. Just unfortunately, because there's another commission coming up. So, is there anyone that really, really wants to say something? I know we were going through order, but I think we need to.
I don't have any more cards.
You don't have any more cards? Okay. So, does anyone just have to say something right now? I mean,
I just would like to say thank you for letting.
Absolutely. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and close the public comment portion of this, and we're going to go ahead and decide on a vote here. Commissioners, you have all the information that you have been provided by staff. Because of the condition, or because of how it's broken up, the assessment here and the resolution, it's A and B. So just so everyone understands, we're gonna go ahead and do two votes, and we're gonna vote on each A and B separately, okay?
Can you walk through explain both of them since we're doing them separately?
Yes, absolutely. So in front of you, you have a resolution for a conditional use permit. And a resolution, which also involves a environmental assessment, which is what what A is about. So A is environmental assessment involving CEQA. So A is saying that it is exempt from that; that there are not going to be any structural, you know, changes there. So it's exempt from actually going through the CEQA process. So that's what A is. And then B, of course, is if we decide that this conditional use permit, that we decide that this permit from this applicant fits this area, the home that is being presented, and then you know, we approve or not approve, and that's what B is. So that is the actual CUP that we're going to vote on. Okay. Okay, so I explained those two. So now, because it's on one resolution, we're going to have to do it together. So we're going to do it together. Instead of separately, we're going to do it together because it was presented as one. But I wanted to explain what A and B was.
So we'll do it as one.
We're just going to do one.
It'll be done as one vote. But yeah. If one of the commissioners wishes to vote yes or no on either one of those items, you should apply that vote to both of them because both the environmental assessment and the conditional use permit
tied together.
Are on one resolution.
So one yay or nay.
That's one. Yeah, so I'm going to read this, and I'm going to read both of them together. That's the one resolution. We're going to vote once on it. But before we do that, again, we just Rob talked about this before. There was that typo, that error, the clerical error about putting switching 10 and 11. So I want to go ahead and add that to this resolution, that we understand that it was a clerical error, and that we are approving it because that under condition 11 would be. The actual number 10 would be number 11, and that'll be taken care of.
Correct.
With the clerical staff. So with that said, in front of you, you have resolution number 2018-1. This is a resolution of the City of Reedley Planning Commission approving environmental assessment number 2018-1, which is the environmental CEQA, and approving conditional use permit application number 2018-1. So I'm going to go ahead and that should include the should note that the swapping of conditions 10 and 11 was a clerical error and they'll be fixed, and note that there will be no wording to be changed, only the order which the conditions are labeled, and this is to ensure the final condition appropriate labels are foregoing conditions. So with that being said, I want to make a motion to approve this CUP and approve this resolution. So if I can get a second with that, then we can do a vote if you agree with me or not. Could I get a second?
I'll make a second.
Okay, so now go ahead and do a roll call, Ellen, and you can vote yes or no.
Chairman Custodio?
Yes.
Commissioner Bissett?
Yes.
Commissioner Hudson?
No.
Commissioner Perez?
Yes.
Okay, so that just means that the CUP, the resolution 2018-1 was approved, and now it will be on to the next phase of this
Correct.
Project.
I want to make sure that anyone in the audience that would be interested in any type of appeal action, if that is not already understood, I would be happy to discuss that with you. Please reach out to me at any time. There's a 10-day period from today that anyone who wishes to appeal that would have the opportunity to do so. There's a fee associated with that, and something needs to be submitted in writing as well, but I would be happy to discuss those details with you if there's anyone here that would appreciate that information.
All right, thank you for coming. We still have to continue our meeting, but we're going to have agendas number 4, and we're going to talk about future dates that we're going to have here, so it might not appeal to everyone. It might be a little boring.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ellen, can we make a note that there is no agenda number 3, and there's agenda item number 4. Should be 3, so we'll go ahead and take care of that.
All right, I apologize for that, but thank you for noting it.
All right, I think we can go ahead and continue so we can get.
Okay.
So, Rob, you have the floor. This is for the director's report.
Yeah, thank you, commissioners. We actually don't have anything substantial to report since the last meeting. But would like to point out the future agenda items. We will be hearing a conditional use permit on February 1st. At this point, there is nothing scheduled for the February 15th or the March 1st meeting. But as you know, that can always change depending on who comes into City Hall with any type of proposed project that we need to assist them with.
All right, so February 1st, please, if you can, be here. And then we'll go from there. Is there any other concerns, questions, comments that we want to talk about right now? No? Okay, I'm going to go ahead and adjourn this meeting.
Thank you.